And good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO in Portland, Oregon, USA, online at kboo.fm. My name is Andrew Geller, and we're coming back to a topic we've touched on many times in the past 4 years, possibly the most important of those shows, given that the topic at hand, the ironically titled USA Patriot Act, has many provisions, though not enough, that are going to sunset at the end of this month, 3 weeks and a half, 3.5 weeks from now, if Congress does not specifically act to reauthorize those provisions. And joining me this morning to talk about what's going on in Congress and to talk about what the past 4 years of the Patriot Act has meant to the community that he represents is Corey Saylor. Corey is the Government Affairs Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the nation's largest American-Muslim civil rights advocacy group. Welcome to our airwaves, Corey.
Andrew, thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Probably everybody's heard about the USA Patriot Act. Some people may even be well aware of the numerous ways in which it violates our constitutionally protected liberties as American citizens. And it's ironically timed such that one of the first, most highly touted Patriot Act prosecutions, John Ashcroft, kicked off in 2003 against Sami Al-Aryan, a former professor down in Florida. That prosecution fell apart yesterday when he was either acquitted or the jury deadlocked on all the counts against him, as well as several other people. Just at the outset, summarize how the Patriot Act has affected the Muslim American community and, Muslims who are not citizens or have permanent status, but who are still living in the U.S.?
Well, I would suggest to you that it's had two major effects on our community. First of all, it's been very chilling to the free speech of our community because many people are just essentially afraid to draw attention to themselves. And that's very unfortunate because this is a community that is essentially the central focus for the Patriot Act, and therefore we're sort of the monitor for civil liberties for the rest of the country in the direction that these civil liberties are headed. So it's a community that's become, to a certain degree, afraid to speak up for itself because, you know, the provisions in the Patriot Act can allow law enforcement to basically come into your home and go through the stuff in your house without telling you about it. You can be surveilled and any other number of things that essentially take your average citizen and make them terrified. Second, it's had the effect of, you know, immediately after September 11th, President Bush went into a mosque and he said Islam is not terrorist. And what you had, the effect that that had is it began to bring Muslims into helping the United States in the war on terror at the very front lines, which is where we want to be. We want to be helping in the war on terror on the very front lines. But the Patriot Act has had the opposite effect in that we certainly feel that it's directed at our community. Our community has been the target of it numerous times. And our community has basically been afraid to stand up and help out our government in the war on terror because, once again, if you say the wrong thing, you might become a victim of the Patriot Act. Perfect example, since we're talking in Portland, Brandon Mayfield. Mm-hmm. Brandon Mayfield was a lawyer. He converted to Islam. Somehow, somebody linked his fingerprint to one of the bombs that went off in Madrid, Spain. So while the FBI is conducting a Patriot Act sneak and peek on him, you have Scotland Yard saying that's no way, the fingerprint identification is completely wrong, and yet Brandon Mayfield ended up being detained and held for a considerable period of time, and one of the pieces of evidence that was used to detain him was that he had Spanish language documents in his home. And I'm sure your listeners are aware that the Spanish language documents that he had in his house was his son's Spanish homework. So, I mean, that's just one example of the use of the Patriot Act where somebody was just standing there and all of a sudden they found themselves the center of a controversy. His name was dragged through the press. He was humiliated. And when the FBI realized their mistake, their apology was issued at like 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, timed just perfectly so that all the journalists were on their way home.
Now, the case with Sami Al-Aryan obviously drew a whole ton of media attention, being the first large-scale use of the Patriot Act in a prosecutorial manner.
Sure.
The jury, I don't know if a 13-day deliberation is a long time. It was a 5-month trial. Al-Aryan was acquitted of 8 of the 17 counts, including the one that the administration touted most heavily, that of conspiring to maim or murder people overseas, which, you know, I could accuse a lot of people in the administration of doing, but I won't. There were also 2 co-defendants who were acquitted of all charges. A third was found not guilty on 24 of 32 counts, the other 8 deadlocked. So this was a huge failure.
Well, I think the thing that's really important to point out here is that the Patriot Act, the role that the Patriot Act played in Sami Al-Aryan's trial is that it allowed various FBI investigations to share the combined information that they had and put together one case. And many people will tell you that the idea of law enforcement sharing information across different departments is not something that's particularly controversial. But now that's in question, because here they brought together all these cases, and what we end up having is a juror saying that the government's case came down to a lack of proof. You know, we have several different departments working together, and they can't prove a simple case against this man.
Okay, so let's get more into specifics of the Patriot Act as opposed to how it's been applied. There are, as I mentioned at the top, many provisions which do sunset, about a dozen or 15 or so that are kind of primarily listed. And then there's many more provisions that pose serious threats to civil liberties that, in fact, are permanent. The House of Representatives has passed a bill. The Senate has passed a bill. There's really significant differences. And so now Congress is currently in recess. There's a conference committee that's dealing with trying to resolve those. Why don't you summarize the differences in the 2 bills, and we'll go from there.
What I'd like to do is sort of tell you about what the conference report is at this point in time.
Okay.
And, you know, a very simple difference between the Senate bill and the House bill. Some of the expiring provisions, the House would like to see extended for 10 years. The Senate would prefer to see it extended for only 4 years. So they came up with a compromise of 7 years, and that's part of what's become a roadblock at this point in time, because even the Senate Judiciary Chairman, who is the person who has the most authority over this, Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania, he refused to sign off on the conference report because of that 7 years. He wants it knocked down to 4. But, you know, to make sure it's very clear to your listeners, the House passed a version of the renewed Patriot Act, a reauthorization bill, earlier this year, and then the Senate passes its own version, and then the 2 of them get together and sort of negotiate a compromise that will then be sent back to both chambers to be voted on. Everybody was sitting just prior to Thanksgiving. We were all sending messages out to our memberships. We expect the vote to happen the day Congress is going to go into recess. The Patriot Act will be reauthorized. We're very concerned about it. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, essentially, 6 senators stood up and said, you know what? We will filibuster this thing if it comes back to us for a vote.
And that essentially derailed.
Essentially what that means is talk the bill to death so that it never comes to a vote. That derailed the whole deal. And an interesting coalition of groups, I mean, already you have extremely conservative groups, extremely liberal groups opposing the Patriot Act, but now you have groups that no one would expect to come out against it, like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, National Association of Realtors, the Gun Owners of America. They've all come out against it.
I've got a copy of their letter to Arlen Specter here in front of me. It's also the Association of Corporate Counsel. I don't know specifics about them, but the name sure tells me a lot. The Financial Services Roundtable. I mean, this is not like anarchist organizations or something like that. These are very pro-corporate entities, and they're saying, about that Section 215.
There you go. And that's the key point that I want your listeners to understand. This is not just something where you have the civil liberties groups, you know, the usual suspects jumping up and down in concern. This is an across-the-spectrum kind of thing. So yesterday the House came back into session. They were away for their Thanksgiving recess. The Senate does not come back into session until the 12th, and that's when we expect things to really heat up again. But to give you some ideas of what's contained in the conference report that has everyone so concerned. Essentially, it still leaves open the problem that we've had all along with Section 215, that Section 215 essentially allows law enforcement to acquire a search warrant for any tangible thing.
Right, it's those sneak and peek provisions
exactly.
That no one has to tell you about.
Exactly. So that means somebody in law enforcement can go into your house, go through your stuff, and then leave, and they never tell you about it, which is totally contrary to the due process we've all become used to. The problem with those things is all law enforcement has to do is go to a judge and say it's part of an ongoing investigation, and the judge essentially has to rubber stamp it. The problem with the compromise is it maintains that law enforcement doesn't have to prove any connection between the target of the investigation and terrorism. It just sort of leaves it open, which basically means it can be used against pretty much anyone.
At any time.
Correct. The 7-year sunsets remain a concern. Out of the 16 provisions, the compromise report makes permanent all of them but 3, and those 3 would be sunsetted in another 7 years. Now, obviously, the Patriot Act was enacted in a time of extreme concern, and sometimes it's okay to give the government more powers then, but you have to have a way to go back and review those powers and say, are they still necessary? 7 years is a very long period of time. I think we'd all certainly like to see it much shorter. The other major concern that I'll go into without just sort of belaboring everybody with DC details is national security letters. Now, those can be issued by an FBI field supervisor with essentially no supervision, and with that letter, law enforcement can require all the personal documents, basically, that you can personally think of, travel, medical, email records, what websites have you been looking at. And then once this letter is served, what they'll usually do is serve it to a third-party provider, like the person who gives you access to the Internet. That provider, or whoever it's served to, is then gagged and cannot even tell their own lawyer that they were served with this letter.
And there's a couple cases in the courts right now back east related to this.
In Connecticut, yes. A very brave person in one of the libraries out in Connecticut, was a place called the Library Connection, was served with one of these letters, and they were able to come forward in such a way that they protected themselves from being prosecuted for violating the gag order and challenged the order. And that's sitting in court right now. We have to sort of see where it goes.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. My guest today is Corey Saylor. He's the Government Affairs Director for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. You can find out more about them online at www.cair-net.org. They also have a brand new blog set up at cairpatriotact.blogspot.com, and that's tracking daily what's going on. You can find links to that as well as a whole bunch of other information related to the Patriot Act sunset provisions and reauthorization and opposition at the People Rise Up website, kboo.fm. Go to the schedule, click Wednesday morning at 10. I want to continue just for a moment with the national security letter conversation and then get back to the Patriot Act more broadly, and how people can influence Congress in the next, you know, week, 10 days, 3 weeks, something like that. Bart Gellman, who writes tremendously long, intricate articles on national security issues, a few weeks ago had a front page story in The Washington Post, actually November 6, a month ago yesterday even, the FBI secret scrutiny in Hunt for Terrorists Bureau examines records of ordinary Americans. And it's not just some ordinary Americans. It was found that 30,000 letters a year, a 100-fold increase since the Patriot Act was passed, are issued annually. And it seems like it's kind of a back door because, you know, it's like, okay, so if the Patriot Act provisions that don't relate to national security letters aren't a way that they can do whatever they want whenever they want, they can say, oh, well, we'll issue a national security letter instead. Is that your sense of what's been happening with them?
It is, and, you know, of course the Department of Justice came back with a response to that article. But the interesting thing in the Department of Justice response, and this was written by Assistant Attorney General William Moschella, he acknowledges some people whose records are produced may not be terrorists or spies or associated with terrorists or spies. Now, that basically means that your record, you know, if they subpoena, say, AOL's records, let's just use that as an example, your personal information would be included in that, so that's how they could acquire it. And the important thing to understand about the most of the investigations that are conducted under the USA Patriot Act are what we call intelligence investigations, very different than a criminal investigation. A criminal investigation will essentially say, well, we know this guy, Corey Saylor, we believe he's committed a crime, and so we're going to focus on him and investigate him. An intelligence investigation kind of goes, well, we have this guy, Corey Saylor, and so we need to know more about whoever he's dealing with. So they can go to my doctor's office and get my doctor's records and everybody else's records at my doctor's office.
Well, and now you've implicated me, too.
Exactly. And yeah, exactly. You understand. We may have shared the same air at some point in time, and therefore you get drawn into the investigation.
Well, and the listeners, too. You're all under suspicion now as well.
That's kind of how it works, and that's the point that I want to make. It goes from a criminal investigation, which is looking at one person, to this intelligence investigation where you have this broad net, and that basically means that all of a sudden we're all suspects.
You know, I know I'm suspicious. I feel maybe better about it. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so we've got about 8 or so minutes left here. The House is back in session. The Senate is gone for like another week and a half. I guess they get back on the 16th.
12th.
Oh, 12th?
Yes.
All right. What should people do? It seems like this is such an opportunity to kill at least some of the provisions of the Patriot Act. Is there a chance of that?
At this point in time, the answer to that is probably not. Once the conference report came out, we now have to look at what we have from the Senate version and what we have from the House version and try to get what's best pushed through. So let me just give you one small inkling of how important it is that people pick up the phone. Don't send emails at this point. Pick up the phone and call your members of Congress. Research shows that only 7% of the United States population takes advantage of the opportunity that they have to pick up their phone, call their member to get in contact with their member of Congress in any way, which means that that small percentage of the population truly has a huge impact on the thinking of members of Congress. And it's not something where you have to call them up and have 10 tons of information and know all your facts backwards and forward. Most congressional offices keep what we call tracking sheets, and they will pick up the phone and you will say, I'm very concerned about the Patriot Act. They'll ask you your name, they'll ask you your zip code, and that's a way of identifying that you are actually a constituent. You live among the people that they represent, and then they'll ask you, how do you stand on it? And it's, you know, either do you support or oppose? And then they make a check mark on the tracking sheet. And the congressman will eventually come by and go, how's the calls running on this? And they'll say, you know, we've got 50 calls in opposition, we've got 10 calls in support, and that can influence the decision very strongly. Well, my district is telling me 5-1, they want me to oppose this piece of legislation. So it's not a big deal for an individual to pick up a phone and call, but the impact can be huge. So what we're recommending is, you know, very simple. Pick up the phone, call your one representative and your two senators, and tell them you want them to oppose the Patriot Act Reauthorization Conference Report. And that's what you have, that's the essential thing you have to do.
Okay.
Then what you have, go ahead.
Well, what about the filibuster? I mean, your folks' blog says the filibuster's got backing. It was initially one, and then it was 6 or 7. And, I mean, is that not really a possibility?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a very serious possibility.
Okay.
On the order of 38 Democratic senators and 13 or 14 Republican senators who are prepared to back it. These phone calls that I'm talking about will generate more support for the filibuster, because what we're saying is we want you to oppose this conference report. So the filibuster would be something that could completely derail the conference report, and what it would probably result in is Congress passing what we call, a continuing authorization.
Okay, that was where I was getting at, what happens if this filibuster happens, it's successful. I know that there's a provision in the Patriot Act that says even if these provisions do sunset, investigations opened prior to their sunset can continue utilizing the tools no longer legally authorized. Now, how does this continuing authorization thing work? They can just like say, oh, we couldn't make it permanent. We're going to continue it like when the budget doesn't get passed in time.
It's exactly like when the budget doesn't get passed. They just sort of pass something that says it stays exactly the same until we have time to turn and address it. Or, they'll put a deadline on that more than likely. But that would be the most likely thing, because obviously it would be a huge blow to this administration if this thing was actually allowed to sunset.
Well, I mean, yeah. Okay. I just see that with enough pressure, it sounds like what you're saying is something's going to happen. Something's going to be continued. It's just a matter of how many of the provisions from the conference actually make it through. It's not possible that this stuff is going to disappear.
I would not count on it disappearing.
Okay.
That has too much administration support. Next year is an election year. The obvious talking point for any member of Congress against their opponent or someone who's running is you let the Patriot Act expire. It was very important to our national security, and so you're not good at your job. I should replace you.
Well, except that the track record of the Patriot Act is kind of laughable, and then, I'm not sure how...
But that's the thing. You and I and your listeners know that. But when, during congressional races, you don't always get that level of substantive detail.
Right, and people...
What you get is the talking point that I just used, and that's what 90% of the people will hear. So,
right,
it's a reality that has to be factored into any political calculation.
Right, because that's what the TV news touches upon.
That's the soundbite of the day, and that's how... I mean, those of us that are that deal with the media all the time, those of us that are in politics, we're all trained to try to think of speaking in soundbites.
Now, other news that happened this week, and you can tell me how much you think this relates. For what it's worth, the 9/11 Discourse Project, the kind of nonprofit afterthought of the 9/11 Commission, issued mostly failing grades. A D is not an F for sure, but a D is kind of a failing grade, especially when you're talking about stuff like national security, etc. 5 Fs, 12 Ds, 2 incompletes on a report card they issued regarding how well the administration is doing in terms of implementing, again, for what they were worth, the 9/11 Commission's recommendations. What significance does that have in the context of Patriot Act reauthorization, do you think?
Well, actually, I'd like to point out to you something that has significance in terms of just our general security.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriot Act has been used against the American Muslim community by far and above more than any other community. And you have a number of members of Congress who are completely comfortable with the idea of essentially low-jacking every Muslim in this country. And for as much as they disgust us and they repulse us, one piece of credit that we have to give Al-Qaeda is that they learn. They attacked the World Trade Center back in 1991. It didn't work. They thought it through again and did it again in 2001. So as they watch and see our government scrutinizing the Muslims, what they're going to do is go ahead and start recruiting people who don't look like Muslims.
Right.
And, let's talk a little bit about terrorists in the United States. Timothy McVeigh, American-born. Terry
mm-hmm.
Nichols, American-born. The Atlanta Olympics bomber, Eric Rudolph, American-born, and doing what he did in the name of Christianity.
Yeah, it seems like it's a lot of, range of education level, but white guys with a military background and possibly Christian upbringing.
And the key in my pointing that out is that no one can sort of say the Arabs are the problem,
mm-hmm.
the Muslims are the problem. Because as soon as you do that, the opposition, the people who look to harm us, will immediately adapt their tactics. They'll say, well, they're focusing on all the guys that look like this, so let's find the people they're not. So you have to come up with legislation that will allow investigators to broadly focus on all the different signs of on extremism in general, not just any particular brand of it, because all of it's a threat to us. And then additionally, what you have to do is make sure that you don't turn us into what it is that we're trying to fight. Because right now, Americans in general are under more scrutiny than they ever have been before.
Mm-hmm.
Your civil liberties are restricted more than they ever have been before. Okay, yes, it's a time of war. We understand that. But time of war does not necessarily mean that you have to restrict civil liberties. And as a matter of fact, I think that it would be something that would help us to be more successful in the war on terror if we are able to ensure that the civil liberties of all Americans are protected, because that undercuts the arguments that the opposition is making against us. They're saying we're oppressive to our own Muslims, and the Muslims here are saying, no, we're not. We're freer to practice here than we are in many places in the world, including Muslim-majority countries.
And we're just going to have to leave it there. My guest this morning is Corey Saylor, Government Affairs Director for the National Office of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the nation's largest American Muslim civil rights and advocacy group. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Corey.
Andrew, I greatly appreciate your time and the time of your listeners.
All right. Thank you so much. And you can reach them online at www.cair-net.org. And the People Rise Up website will have links to their site, the Patriot Act blog they've set up, many resources from the American Civil Liberties Union and other groups. Contact your congressperson soon. Phone calls, not email. Phone calls. The House is in session. The Senate's back in a few days. The Patriot Act may not quite entirely expire, but doing what we can bit by bit is certainly worthwhile. If you have comments or questions about anything you heard today or any other day on this program, you can send email to me at kboo@riseup.net. The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm always has links to audio files of this show. You can download, podcast, what have you, as well as lots of links to more information about everything we ever talk about and more. Thank you very much for listening.